before the break, Marissa said to ask each other a question. Do you remember the question? How are you doing? How are you really doing? Now, we ask each other this question just walking around the street. And I want to know something. When someone asks you, how are you doing, do you honestly answer? Or do you say, oh, I'm good? Half the time, yeah. Right? So not very many people honestly answer very often. I decided that, you know, when I ask someone, how are you doing, I really actually want to know. And if I expect other people to give me an honest answer, then I'm going to give an honest answer. And so maybe that's more than people want to know when they ask. Mostly if you know someone personally, I tend to be a little bit more honest. And if it's the barista of the coffee shop, I tend to be a little bit more generic. But what I've noticed about something, and I wonder if you've noticed this too, the answers I give seem to become sort of the same. I realized at one point when people asked how I was doing, I said, I'm tired. I realized, wow, I say I'm tired a lot. So that does not sound very good. It makes me sound like a wet blanket. So then it became, oh, I'm just really busy. Has anyone asked you, how are you doing? And you say, I'm busy. I think a lot of us say that. I've heard a lot of people say, oh, really busy, really busy. And, you know, it's true. Life is complicated in our day and time, right? Like, you can't do anything without it involving layers of complication. I just think about, what's the complication involved in driving a car? Like, you have to have a registration for the car and insurance, right? And you've got to go through these steps to maintain those things. And to do those, you have to have some sort of device to go, because you have to do it online now, right? So you have to have some sort of phone or computer you can do that on. And then you have to have a mailing address. And so you have to have all these different things and methods of communication. And we've got all these cool tools that help us and make things more efficient. But each one takes us a little bit of maintenance, right? And so just keeping up with life means that you stay busy. And in fact, I've noticed that a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine, don't do a lot of the things that they want to do because they're too busy. They're too tired. I say, what do you do for fun these days? Oh, nothing. I'm like, really? Yeah. After work, I'm just too tired. I just go home and watch TV. That's my hobby, right? And that's very common. I've talked to so many people who do that. I talk to people, hey, do you want to go and hang out and do this thing? It's fun. And, oh, we'll see how I'm feeling. I don't know. Or sometimes I talk to people and I'm like, oh, I would. I'm just too busy right now. But then I'm like, what are you busy with, right? Work. I mean, that's most of us, I think. And, like, I'm not here to bring shame. I'm not here to say you're doing it wrong. But I do wonder if we're all kind of collectively getting trapped in these cycles of exhaustion and missing out on the things we want to do, if we're missing out on enjoying life, if we're missing out on what Jesus has for us. And I've noticed something else. One is that, like, we get trapped in the cycle where we think we can do more. And we can do, if I could just do a little bit more, if I could just push myself a little bit harder. I'm a software developer. We had, at one point, a staff of about 16 software developers, and a lot of the new ones would, newish ones, they reach a certain level, and they're like, I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to work a 60-hour week this week. And I was like, don't do that. No, I can do it. I can do it. No, please don't. You will not be able to maintain that. No, I can do this. And I said, well, we'll give it a month. And if you can still manage 40 hours after a month, then sure. And what I found personally and what I've seen every single time is, yeah, you can absolutely work a 60-hour week. And again, you know, software development, very mentally taxing. Takes a lot of concentration. You can maintain your concentration for 60 hours in a week. What I found every time is the next week, I put in a good 20 hours, tops. Like, I may be sitting in the chair for 60, But actual productive time? No, it all came out of the future, and then the future is now, and then nothing. And so that's what happens to all of us if we go, well, if I could just a little bit more, I just need to get back on top. I just need to, and we get stuck in a cycle where it's never enough. And the good news this morning is that God has a solution. And that's what we're going to talk about in Hebrews today. We've been studying Hebrews. We've talked about how Jesus is better than angels and he's better than Moses. And now we reach Hebrews 4. And I hope you have a Bible and you'll turn and read with me. I'm just going to read the whole passage this morning. And then we're going to go back through and pull out a few things. Therefore, we must be wary that while the promise of entering his rest remains open, none of you may seem to have come short of it. Now, I don't know about you, but I seem to have come short of rest a lot. So we have had the good news proclaimed to us, just as they did. He's talking about the Israelites wandering in the wilderness. But the message they heard did them no good, since they did not join with those who heard it in faith. For we have believed, enter their rest. As he said, I swore in my anger, they will never enter my rest. And yet God's works were accomplished from the foundation of the world. For he has spoken somewhere about the seventh day in this way, and God rested on the seventh day from all his works. But to repeat the text cited earlier, they will never enter my rest. Therefore it remains for some to enter it, yet those to whom it was previously proclaimed did not enter it because of disobedience. So God again ordains a certain day, today. Hey, that's today. Speaking through David, after so long a time, as in the words quoted before, oh, that today you would listen as he speaks. Do not harden your hearts, for if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken afterwards about another day. Consequently, a Sabbath rest remains for the people of God, for the one who enters God's rest has also rested from his works, just as God did from his own works. Thus, we must make every effort to enter that rest so that no one may fall by following the same pattern of disobedience. Now, you may be saying, how does this help me at all? But the original readers of Hebrews would be nodding along with this passage because they would understand all the connections to the Hebrew Bible that are present here. And so I want you to follow the connections with me, because God has such wonderful things in his book. It's really cool. Starting with verse 3 and 4, he talks about, and yet God's works were accomplished from the foundation of the world, for he's spoken about the seventh day. Well, that's a callback to Genesis 1, in the beginning, because God's plan of rest starts from the very beginning of the Bible, and it goes all the way through the end. In the beginning, there was nothing. Well, the Hebrew concept of nothing was more like chaos. There was just chaotic nothing, right? And then God starts putting structure in. There's morning and there's evening. There's light and there's dark. And he makes 3 days of building structure. And then the next 3 days, he fills these places that he's created with life of all kinds. Varieties, flourishing, infinite variety, right? And then God stops. On the seventh day, he stops. He says, that's good. And every day up to that point, there's morning, there's evening the first day. There's morning, there's evening the second day. There's evening and morning the second day, the third day, the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day. He doesn't say it for the seventh day. God said, this is good. And on the seventh day, there's no beginning, there's no end. And then his presence fills creation with his rest. It's this beautiful picture of a God who creates everything and then says, this is enough, this is right here. Now, in the passage we just read in Hebrews, there's two different words that are used for rest. And our translation here distinguishes them. The one place it says a Sabbath rest, slightly different word. And sure enough, if you look back in Genesis, there's actually two different words related to rest as well. And so I want to look at that because I want to know, what are we talking about? What does God mean by rest? And the first word I mentioned, the Sabbath rest, in Hebrew, it's Shabbat, And that's the first word that we see in Genesis for rest. It's Genesis 2. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing, and so the seventh day he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Rested. Shabbat. Which literally means to cease, to stop. It has this connotation of rest, but it means to stop doing something. To say, that's it. Right there. I'm going to stop. We have this sense of resting. But then there's another way that God rests. A few verses later, he puts out Adam in the garden. In verse 15, the Lord God took the man and placed him in the orchard of Eden to care for it and maintain it. Well, the root word for placed here is rested. You know, if you put something where it belongs, it rests there. And that's what God did. He rested Adam in his place, in this perfect garden where he was meant to be. See, we belong in a garden. We belong in the presence of God. And so going back to the Greek, the Greek word that's most frequently used in Hebrews 4 kind of takes these ideas and wraps them all up. This idea of kataposis. Kataposis? Am I saying that right, Jenny? Kataposis. Repose, abode, settle down to rest. So what does it mean to rest? Well, first we have to stop, right? Just like God did in the creation. We have to stop doing what we're doing. We have to cease activity, right? But then it's more than that, because rest is a place. Rest means we abide. Now, last week we talked about finding God in the wilderness. This is sort of the continuation, right? Because the children of Israel were brought out by Moses from Egypt. They're in slavery, and they go through the Red Sea, and God meets them on the mountain. And this is such a metaphor for our lives, because God brings us out of things. But then we feel like we're in this desert, and he gives us enough, but just barely enough, and we feel like we're struggling. We have to learn to trust him, but he wants us to know him. And this is kind of part two of that. So if you missed part one, it's on the website. It's really cool. But God has promised a land of rest to the Israelites. They're going through the wilderness, but his plan is not for them to live in the wilderness forever. In fact, his plan wasn't for them to be in the wilderness for 40 years. That was because they refused to go along with the plan, which was to give them rest in the promised land, in the land of Canaan. God had put this place of rest in front of them. And that's the promise of rest that Hebrews 4 was referring to. But he does a really cool thing in the desert. He invites them to live as if they're already there. In Hebrews 4:6, therefore remains for some to enter it, yet to those whom it was previously proclaimed did not enter it because of disobedience. The problem is they didn't want to enter it. They didn't want to do the thing. So he made a rule about the Sabbath. He said, you must keep the Sabbath holy. But what I find fascinating is that this is not a new commandment. It begins with Genesis. It begins with the creation story. See, these are people who were slaves. How many days a week does a slave work? 7, right? They don't get days off. 8, 8 and a half. Yeah. And how valuable is a slave? How much they can produce. That's their only value, right? And so these people have been liberated from slavery. And the first thing that God wants to tell them in Genesis is that rest is important, that he has made us for rest, that we are valuable for more than our production. We're valuable. You're valued for who you are, not what you can do, right? And so, in case they didn't quite understand how serious he was about resting, he says, keep the Sabbath day holy. Keep the seventh day holy. And holy means set apart. It means special, right? And so what they would do is they would use these rituals to set apart the seventh day. In the Jewish timekeeping, a day began at sundown and go to the next sundown. So you'd have evening and morning, just like in Genesis. And so in a traditional Sabbath ceremony, it's called a kiddush, and you begin by lighting candles at sundown. And then you pray a blessing. Blessed are you, God, ruler of the universe, who sanctified us with the commandment of lighting Shabbat candles. And then you would eat a Sabbath meal with your family and your community. And then at the end of the Sabbath day, right before sundown, you would end by praying and sharing the highlights of your Sabbath. You give instructions. Don't work. Rest. Cease. Abide. But he doesn't stop there, because there's more than one Sabbath in the Hebrew Bible. He commands more than one Sabbath, more than just every seventh day. There's seven feasts in the Old Testament. And feasts are gatherings. Some of them are very big celebrations. They're parties, because God wants us to enjoy life. He wants us to enjoy the blessings that he's given us. And so each one of these was a special time. He wanted to say, there's more rest than every seventh day. You need to rest more often than that. But then it gets beyond that. Every seventh year, the whole year is a Sabbath year, a whole year of rest. You're supposed to let the land rest. You know, we find out now with modern agriculture that it turns out that if you plant the same thing in a field year after year, after about 5 or 6 years, stuff doesn't grow as well. You need to let the land rest. God commanded that all the way back. He says, rest is part of creation. Rest is part of my plan. Every seventh year, take off the whole year. More than that, forgive debts. If anyone owes you money, no, they don't. No, they don't. But then there's another Sabbath, because every seven Sabbath years, how many is that? Seven times seven, 49. So every 50th year is the year of Jubilee. It's like a super Sabbath year where everything gets restored. Everything gets put back to the way it was. If you sold land to another family, it all reverts. And we have a big celebration. We celebrate what God's done through us as a community. And so God's promise of rest isn't just to have more healthy, sustainable rhythms for life. It is that, but it's so much more than that, because it's a foretaste of the greater rest that's coming. It's a foretaste of this promised land. See, Hebrews 4, verse 8, if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken about another day. Consequently, a Sabbath rest remains for the people of God. See, Joshua was the one who took over from Moses to lead them into the promised land at last. So Joshua is this great leader who takes them into this promised rest, but there's another rest, is what the author of Hebrews is saying. We still have a rest to look forward to. This was symbolic of the rest that we will truly have. And so rest isn't just ceasing activity, it's also a place. It's also a way of being. So what does the promised land teach us about rest? And by extension, our eternal rest in Jesus. Well, for one thing, it's a place where we all share in the abundance and blessing of God. Deuteronomy 15 says, in that Sabbath year, he's talking about the Sabbath year, and he says, however, there should not be any poor among you, for the Lord will surely bless you in the land that he's giving you as an inheritance, if you keep carefully obey him by keeping all the commandments that I'm giving you today. It says we're supposed to share with each other. We're supposed to forgive those debts. We're supposed to share in the blessings so that there's no one with need. Because in God's rest, we don't go hungry. He was giving them this land as an inheritance, we just read. It belongs to them. It's where you belong. You know, if you've lived in a rented room in someone's house. I don't know if you've ever done that. I've done that. Rent a room out of someone's house. And that room is yours, but like you're kind of living in someone else's house. And there's always that like feeling of, I don't really belong here. Like, it's okay, but I don't know. It's always a little awkward. But then if you own your house, if you grow up in a house your parents own, right? You belong there. You don't think twice about sitting on the couch. It's your couch. And you can feel at rest there. You're not worried that someone's going to come in and, oh, I should let them sit here. Right? That's how the people of Israel are when they go in the land of Canaan. We can set down roots here. We can build here. We can do creative things here. And that's the promise that Jesus has to us in his kingdom, is that he will give us, he'll make a place for us in his Father's house. And so we have a place to belong. Isn't that something we say a lot? Fellow Vineyard, you have a place to belong, because the Father has made a place for us to belong. We want to share that place with others. We make a space. You don't have to go anywhere. And then there's a new kind of work. God rests Adam in the garden and says, take care of it. Now, in the Garden of Eden, that was pretty easy to take care of. It was more of a creative endeavor. Later, the land's cursed, and now farming is hard work. But in the garden, it was easy. It was an opportunity to express creativity. It was an opportunity to co-create and participate in God's art and beauty. And so I think that God promises us the opportunity to do fun and creative things. I think there's that implicit as well. Just as the people of Israel, they had to still farm the land, but it was a good land. It was easy to farm. It was a place where they could build a home. Now, in Hebrews 2, we looked at this a couple weeks ago, Jesus is the complete revelation of what God looks like, but he's also the complete revelation of what we were meant to be. And so it makes sense that here in chapter 4, he's the one to show us what it means to rest. When Jesus was walking on earth, he proclaimed himself the Lord of the Sabbath in Matthew 12:8. He says, I'm the one who shows you what it truly means, who's in charge of this thing called rest. I'm the prime example. And he did very interesting things on the Sabbath. Jesus also proclaimed the year of Jubilee in a famous passage where he announces his mission statement to the world. He begins his ministry, and he ends it with a quote from Isaiah. He says he's here to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. That's a reference to the Jubilee year, that 50-year celebration where all debts are canceled, everything gets restored. The Lord blesses with extraordinary favor. So he's here to bring the super Sabbath, if you will. But very interestingly, Jesus was raised not on the seventh day, not on the Sabbath, but on the eighth day, or the first day of a new week, because he's here to bring the first, that was the first day of the new creation that he's here to bring. So now, since then, we've traditionally come to take our rest here on Sunday, the beginning of the week, because we're looking forward to the completion of that new creation. Now, in the early church, this was seen as kind of a separate thing, especially among Jewish believers. They maintained Sabbath observances, and then they would observe the Lord's Day on Sunday. But then Paul comes along and says, well, if you're not a Jewish believer, don't get tripped up by that. Worship God on Sunday if you want, right? So we're not here to become legalistic. Jesus makes that very clear, that the Sabbath is made for us, not us for the Sabbath. But I think we can learn a lot from what God has taught his people over the millennia about rest. So now we come to Jesus as the one leading us into this rest. And I think it's really cool that Hebrews is connecting this back to Moses and Joshua in the wilderness. So in verse 8, for if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken afterwards been another day, but a Sabbath rest remains for us. So he's saying that just like Joshua led them into rest in the promised land, Jesus is leading us into rest. And by the way, it's a kind of a funny thing. The Hebrew words for Joshua and Jesus are actually the same thing, and they're just translated differently because of the way the etymology went through our translators. But you could say Jesus is better than Jesus, if that makes sense. No? I thought that was funny. But Joshua and Jesus are the same Hebrew name, Yeshua. And so Yeshua, if Yeshua had led them into the promised land, we have a new Yeshua who will lead us into God's kingdom. And so that's what we're talking about this morning. Just like the Israelites are invited to live in the future rest that Joshua would lead them into, we are invited to begin living in the future rest that Jesus will lead us into right now, here today. And so that's what we talk about when we say the kingdom has come and the kingdom is coming. We want to experience his rest now, understanding that he has more rest for us, but it's not yet here. And so how do we rest? How do we experience the promised land? How do we experience his kingdom now? Well, we continue on in Hebrews in verse 10. For the one who enters God's rest has also rested from his works, just as God did from his own works. Thus, we must make every effort to enter that rest so that no one may fall by following the same pattern of disobedience. Now, I thought that was kind of funny. Did you catch that? You see what's funny about that? Okay, so rest is stopping, right? Rest is ceasing. So make every effort to stop your effort. Okay? I thought it was funny. But I think it also makes a certain amount of sense, because if you're going to rest, I mean, you can just collapse, right? I mean, that's happened to me before, but that's not what we're talking about. If you're going to intentionally step into this concept of rest, then you need to make a plan. You need to prepare for that. And it helps if your plan is realistic, right? Like, it helps if your plan will take into account the obstacles that you might encounter. You know, we've all had optimistic plans. We're going to do this and that, and then it just didn't work out. But we want to be realistic about what's stopping us from enjoying rest. And so you may need to think about what those things are and how you can overcome those. It takes preparation. If you don't go shopping ahead of time, you might get hungry halfway through your rest day. And, well, I guess I should go to the grocery store, right? Now it kind of messes up your rest day. And your time of rest needs to actually be restful. You know, I love going on a vacation and seeing the sights and doing all the exciting things. And I get back and I'm like, I need a vacation for my vacation. Right? We've all done that. I've had plenty of days of rest that I'm like, I am not ready to go into work tomorrow. I am not rested. Can I tell you what works for me? This is just free. When I have time off or even a day off, what helps me a lot of times is I'll make a list of everything I want to do. All these things I've wanted to do and haven't had time. And I make a list, and then I give myself permission to not do any of them. And I wake up and I look at my list and think, oh, that looks fun. And I get started and I'm like, I'm tired of this. Okay, I'm going to do something else. I might do this. And then I look up some information. One thing leads to another. You know how it is on the internet. One thing leads to another. And all of a sudden you're reading about the history of the Roman Empire for 3 hours and reading all these interesting articles. And well, that's just for fun. It doesn't have anything to do with it, but I give myself permission to not have to worry about it. No one's standing over me as a taskmaster saying you're behind schedule. That's what rest is for me. It's just being able to do the fun things and not, I don't want to do that. Well, then I won't. But here's my question about your rest day. Why is it so hard to stop? Why is it so hard to stop doing things? You know, it's funny to me because Hebrews 4 keeps on saying, don't harden your hearts. Don't rebel like they did. Don't rebel against him. Do what he says. Just rest, okay? And you'd think, well, you wouldn't think you'd have to convince me so hard, except that I know me. And I know that it's really hard to stop. I want you to know I felt very convicted this week. Not in the you're bad, you should feel bad, because that's not how God convicts, but in the way of, you know, you do a lot of work on your rest day, and then you complain about being tired. Have you ever thought about actually resting? And I'm like, yeah, I guess I know that, but why is it so hard to stop? Well, we have things that have to be done, right? That's why we need to make a plan. But part of it is it's so hard to stop doing things because, well, we're afraid of what will happen if we stop. Now, for the Israelites, this was so existential. What happens if you don't work on the Sabbath? Well, maybe you won't keep up on your farming chores and you won't have enough food and then you'll starve. This is a big, scary thing. It's the same thing for us. What if you don't do your taxes on your off day? Bad things is what? You need a plan for getting your taxes done, But if your plan is to do it on your rest day, I have news for you. You don't have a rest day. So to do this, we have to make some kind of sacrifice, and we have to give up control of our most valuable resource. What's our most valuable resource? Time. We have to give up control of our time, and I don't like that. I like controlling my time. It takes a lot of faith to believe that God will take care of you if you stop for a day. It's almost like we're in a wilderness and we're counting on water to come out of a rock. And let me tell you, if you're depending on water coming out of a rock to drink, that makes me nervous, right? It's pretty cool, right? We talked last week about the story of God pouring water out of a rock so the people of Israel wouldn't die of thirst. And that is pretty darn cool. I'd love to see that. I would not like that to be my only water source. And yet that's what God invites us into, is do you trust me to provide for you if you take a day of rest? Sabbath was made for us. It's not a way to prove our holiness. It's not a list of rules. You got to find out what works for you. You've got to try some things. And that's what Jesus says in Mark 2:27. Sabbath was made for people, not people for the Sabbath. So I'm not here to give you a bunch of rules and say you need to do this to be holy, for God to love you. It's the other way around. God's saying, I have a good thing for you. Would you like it? Do you want it today? So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I want to invite you to reflect. I want to give us some space to rest here in this time, in this place, just a few minutes to let the Holy Spirit come. And I want to talk about what I want you to talk to the Holy Spirit about. First, what does rest look like for you? Like, what does stopping look like? What do you need to stop? What do you do all week that you could do with stopping? Do you need to stop looking at your phone? I don't know about you. I look at my phone every day. I wake up, I look at my phone. I'm about to go to bed, I look at my phone, right? Maybe you need to stop looking at that for a day, just to see how it goes. You need to stop looking at the news or Facebook, right? Maybe you need to stop cooking, if that's the thing that is a big thing in your week. Maybe that's the day you don't cook and you eat leftovers. Or maybe that's the day you do cook because you need to celebrate and you stop eating out, right? What does stopping look like for you? And what does abiding look like? What does it mean to just be and exist and welcome God's presence in? And belong someplace. See, the thing about rest is you know how you can eat empty calories? You know what empty calories are, right? I mean, they are energy for your body. Are they good for your body? Well, no, because they don't have all the other nutrients. They don't have the fiber. They don't have the vitamins that enable your body to be healthy, but they will give you energy. And there's things that we do to rest that are like empty calories. Marissa and I call it vegging, right? And sometimes you need this, okay? I'm not saying that you can never veg ever again, but don't confuse that with a healthy rest, right? Because if your only rest is passing out in front of the TV or scrolling TikTok for that third hour, looking at Facebook some more, you're not resting, right? That's empty calories. That's going to lead to more unhealth and less rest. So how do you rest your body? Well, if you're not super active, this is something I've found. For me, resting my body often, because I sit a lot for work. I'm not active enough during the week. So resting my body actually looks like taking a walk. It actually looks like doing something. What am I stopping? I'm stopping sitting is what. I've sat all week. I'm going to stop sitting and walk, and I'll feel much better, right? But maybe if you are very active, maybe it means not being active, right? Maybe it means taking a nap. Sometimes your body just needs sleep. And you should not beat up on yourself for taking a nap on your off day. What does it mean to rest your mind? Get rid of that phone, right? Get rid of the noise. Get rid of the things that are feeding you that information. And the problem you're going to have with that is that then you might be alone with your thoughts. How many of us? Oh, I'm not going to ask for raise of hands. I'm going to expose people. I'm just gonna confess my own thing. When I sit down, 9 times out of 10, I sit down and I go, Right? Just pull that phone right out. You know, I discovered something. There is this screen time feature on your phone. I'm not kidding. This is amazing. You can do all kinds of things. You can say, only allow me to see this app for 15 minutes a day. You can say, don't turn on this entire day if you want. You can go through and say, I don't have the self-control for this. You can just go in and set it. Now, that might help you to rest. You might feel better after that, right? But it can be really hard to be alone with your thoughts. I find that it's really helpful to have a notepad and just brain dump. Just get those thoughts out there, because once they're out, okay. No, I don't need to think about that. I wrote it down. It's okay. And that's sometimes when my creativity comes the most alive. So we rest our body, our mind. How does it mean to rest our soul? Well, sing, meditate, commune. I mean, commune with others, commune with God. That's one thing I love about church. This isn't a message about you have to go to church more often. But for me, I've always found the Sunday morning service to be the one place in my life where I was guaranteed an hour of rest. Because even when I wasn't feeling it, even when I wasn't into the songs and the band wasn't quite on and the sermon wasn't very good, at least I could just sit in the presence of God and I could sit with friends who love me. And at least for an hour, I could let the rest of the world go and just be, just abide, just stop. And so for me, Sunday morning service has become very, very important for that purpose, just to have that space built into my calendar that's immovable, that I have a guaranteed place where I will at least rest an hour, hour and a half. And then if I rest for an hour and a half, sometimes that gives me enough foresight to think, well, how am I going to rest this afternoon? How am I going to rest this evening? Who can I commune with? Who can I just be with and abide with? What does God want to do today? And I want to add one more thing. Rest includes those for whom you're responsible for. What's really interesting is God's commandment of the Sabbath. He says, you need to let your servants rest. You need to let your animals rest. I think that's kind of wild. Just God says, your cattle? Yeah, don't make them work. Don't make your mule work. Don't ride your horse. Just rest. But it is lawful to do good. It is lawful to do bless others. In Matthew, the Pharisees are like, no, no, you can't heal people. And Jesus says, would not one any one of you, if you had a sheep that fell into a pit on the Sabbath, take hold of it and lift it out? How much more valuable is a person than a sheep? So it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. It's always the right time to do the right thing. I think that was Martin Luther King Jr. So as we transition towards ministry time, I want you to consider what rituals might you need to remind yourself to rest and guard that time. You don't have to light a candle like the ancient Hebrews did and many Jews do still today. But what's going to signify to yourself that, oh yes, I'm beginning rest. No more work. No more work for the rest of the day. Maybe there's something you need on your phone to make it go, hey, it's rest time. Maybe you want to pull out a special snack that you can eat at the beginning of your rest day to say, oh, I'm starting to rest. How can you guard that time? What things do you need to put in place? And most of all, how can you find rest in Jesus? I want to finish out with Hebrews for the rest of the chapter 12 and 14. I didn't read this earlier. And at first when I read this, I was like, I don't know what this has to do with the rest of it. And so I asked God, and he told me. So we must make every effort to enter the rest, so we won't fall by following the same pattern of disobedience, for the word of God is living and active and sharper than any double-edged sword, piercing even to the point of dividing soul from spirit and joints from marrow. It is able to judge the desires and thoughts of the heart, and no creature is hidden from God, but everything is naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must render an account. And that seems very serious, and it is. God knows us. He already sees us. So that's what keeps me from enjoying the presence of God, is that, I don't know, God, I don't really want God to see me. I don't really want him to know me. I don't want him to show me what are my true desires, the thoughts of my heart. All that stuff is going in my brain. I just want to veg so I don't have to think about it. But there's more good news, because if you continue, it says, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest incapable of sympathizing with our weaknesses, but one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin. Therefore, let us confidently approach the throne of grace to receive mercy and grace whenever we need help. That's Jesus' invitation to us in rest, is to abide in him, to rest in him, to take all the things that we're afraid of, all the stress, the anxiety, the fears, all the places where we've had desires that have been twisted a little bit, led us to bad places. And he says, I already know all that. I already see all that. But I can also sympathize. So come boldly and receive that grace. Because when we give him our fears and anxieties, and our sadness, and our disappointments, and our losses, and the things we've messed up on, the things we're embarrassed about, when we give him all those things, he gives us back grace. And I don't know about you, but I can't really rest if I'm fearful and anxious, if I'm embarrassed, if I'm scared. And so when I come to Jesus and say, this is what I've got, and it ain't pretty, and he gives me back grace, that's when I can find rest. Mercy's going to come and just play softly as we take some moments. I'm going to have some questions up on the screen. I just want to invite you to just ask Jesus in the next 5 minutes or so, how can I rest? What do you want to show me about what I can do to receive this blessing that you want to give me, to receive the rest that you have for me? Help me to understand what you want me to stop doing so that I can begin living in the reality of the rest that you've promised right now, here today. I'm going to end with Jesus' words in Matthew. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke on you and learn from me. A yoke is something that you're joined together with Jesus, but he's pushing, he's making it easy because he's doing the work. But the yoke also represents his teaching, the things he wants to tell you, because when he teaches you, he leads you. When he leads you and he's doing the work, then it's easy. He's bringing you to a better place. So take my yoke on you and learn from me, because I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Jesus, we are weary and burdened. And so I thank you that you promise us rest, that you are faithful, that you invite us to come boldly to the throne of grace. So I invite you to speak to our hearts. I ask that you would unstop our ears, that you would unstop our eyes, that you would show us the work that you are doing. That you'd soften our hearts, that we wouldn't harden our hearts in rebellion, that we wouldn't say, well, you don't understand, this is too important. But you'd help us to trust you. You'd help us to rely on your faithfulness and abide in your presence.